We present the News Quiz with your host, Miles Jupp.
Hello. And welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a notice from Magdalen College Chapel in Oxford, read by Cathy Clugston.
The sermon at Sunday morning service will be a reflection on the deadly sin of gluttony, followed by a free hot lunch.
Our thanks to Richard Lloyd Morgan for sending us that biblical belter. Now, let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Francis Ween and Holly Walsh. And opposite them, on my left, Edinburgh Comedy Award nominee Dane Baptiste and Susan Kalman. Francis, who's got an austere prediction about Brexit?
It's the referendum campaign, which we're now in Purdah. Well, Whitehall is in Purdah. It's very exciting. Civil servants have to behave themselves for a whole month from now on until after the referendum. But they had a last frenzy of foolery producing a dossier for George Osborne. They got a bit carried away. They were demob happy, and so they produced this for George Osborne. Even Remain supporters felt perhaps it was a bit iffy, saying, oh, if we leave the EU, family holidays will cost exactly £232 more. His big shock scenario was that house prices might remain stable, which would never do. He launched it with Cameron at a B&Q, I think. And so because they were at B&Q, Osborne felt obliged to say, and if we leave, there will be a DIY recession. If we'd been at the Battersea Dogs home, he would have said Dalmatians or something. Anyway, he launched this thing, and a wonderful Tory MP by the name of Fish, rather implausibly, tweeted that it was specious bollocks. And George Osborne said, no, it's been peer-reviewed, and I'm not making this up, by a man called Mr. Bean. And Mr. Bean said it was all right, so it wasn't specious, or the other word.
300 historians wrote a letter to The Guardian saying that they think we should stay in the EU.
10 generals wrote to The Guardian as well, I think, didn't they?
10 generals, 300
and 463 lavatory cleaners.
Five gold rings!
But there are pro-Brexit historians as well, I think.
Who have they got on their historian battle bus?
Andrew Roberts, possibly, and Sir Ian Botham.
That's...
Why can't cricketers write to the papers?
How do 300 people write a letter together anyway? It's almost as if it's one of the ideas and the other said, oh, all right, yes, I'll sign your wretched letter.
Maybe they wrote a word each. Maybe it's like one of those games where you write a word and you put it in an envelope.
Like consequences.
Yeah, consequences.
So they had no idea what it was going to get, and they get to the end, they unfold it. Oh, my God, it turns out that we're in favour of staying in Europe.
I think a lot of people are unsure of what's going to happen if we stay or leave. They were doing this concert for Brexit with Five, Alicia Dixon, Sister Sledge. Now, if you weren't persuaded before, I think seeing Five performing their greatest hit would really have persuaded you at that point. But they all pulled out, didn't they?
Sister Sledge are still there, aren't they?
No, I think they've gone as well.
E17 were doing it.
E17. Now, they
were all of E17?
No, just the ones that are left.
Do you know how many members of Five are left?
There are four members of Five left.
There's only three members of Five.
Is there only three members of Five?
Yeah, it's an ongoing situation. It's not just the dossier, of course. Someone else said, it was the Institute for Fiscal Studies. They came out at the same time this week. They said a vote to leave could result in a 20 to 40, just sort of ballpark, billion hit the public finances in sort of 4 or 5 years. What else has been going on? Has anyone seen the poster this week, for instance?
Oh, yeah, the youth vote one. It lost its G's because young people don't sound their G's, and so it was all sort of earning, learning, voting and patronising.
Yeah, with apostrophes and everything at the end to make it look more street.
Yeah. No, it didn't have apostrophes. No, the apostrophes, they're so last century.
It's having punctuation more or less street.
I love the way that Francis Ween just taught you how to be young.
Yeah. There was also a rather strange-looking poster with a seesaw on it, with a white skinhead jabbing his finger at a woman wearing a sari.
It's a poster designed to encourage minority votes. It shows how our votes can carry equal weight. It's got a young skinhead who's furious with a serene-looking Indian woman. It's because she's been complaining quite crassly about the Romanian family who've just moved in next door. He is getting increasingly worked up trying to explain the importance of free movement in a world of globalised capital. But you've got to look at the poster for quite a long time to work out that that's what's going on.
Do you think that if we come out, are we going to be allowed to buy tickets for the Euro Millions lottery anymore? Or is Mr. Jean-Claude Juncker going to put a stop to that as well?
You must stop with this endless paranoia, Francis.
You probably won't even be able to have your name Francis.
No. And we won't be allowed to use any of their little French catchphrases.
No.
Can't eat spaghetti.
Probably can't say dossier.
No.
Say folder.
Euston Station would be decimated because it's all just upper crust and the least of France's. And what would the upper crust sell if they weren't allowed baguettes?
And then Pret would just be called Ready.
Yeah.
Vociferously, this is the news that the Institute for Fiscal Studies have claimed that leaving the EU would extend austerity for another 2 years, putting off the date when the snows in this country finally thaw and Aslan returns to rule over his kingdom. For younger listeners, that was a reference to the Chronicles of Narnia, a sort of pre-decimalisation Game of Thrones. The IFS claims to be an impartial body, but in actual fact they are, of course, biased in favour of the snarling, bloated pig dogs of capitalism against the interests of our gentle brothers, the workers. Rise up, comrades, as we used to say at prep school. Also this week, George Osborne released a Treasury dossier warning that Brexit could lead to the loss of 820,000 jobs. In fact, the only jobs that will grow in demand are gravedigger, apocalyptic horse groom and something called Thunderdome Warrior. All of this is, of course, part of Project Fear. Interestingly, also the internal BBC codename for the relaunch of Top Gear. Everybody in this building absolutely bricking it. Two points to Francis. Dane, who could soon have the right to gas on?
The story is about Third Energy, who is a company that's now been ratified to resume fracking in a quaint place called Kirby Misperton, which is in North Yorkshire, it's relatively close to Scarborough.
Your working knowledge of Yorkshire is really...
Well, yeah, because my family's from Huddersfield and then I went to university in Bradford.
And are you sponsored by the Yorkshire Tourist Board?
Not yet. Kirby Misperton is based in Rydale, and the North Yorkshire County Council voted in favour by a vote of 7-4 to resume fracking, which has been very much opposed by interest groups such as Greenpeace and Friends of the Earth, as well as local residents who are aware that previous fracking happened in Field in 2011, where there were some minor earthquakes. And I feel like minor is not really an adjective to use when describing earthquakes. North Yorkshire County Council has allowed Third Energy to do this because they believe they're helping out with what's called an energy crunch, which I find hard to believe because I see a lot of lights come Christmas time. which, depending if you are of a secular or religious disposition, is still an affront to God. I am very worried about the idea of fracking. I mean, even the phrase alone just doesn't sound encouraging. It feels like we're already describing like the prologue of a disaster film. In a small, quiet town where nothing ever goes wrong.
So they did have these earthquakes. So when they were testing on the sort of Fylde Coast, Lancashire, they did fracking tests, and that caused two minor earthquakes, which I think is a relief, isn't it? Because it turns out it's the testing that causes earthquakes. Once you've got that out of the way, then you're absolutely fine. Fracking itself causes only happiness and the revival of the dead.
They've missed the trick, I think, the people promoting this, to neutralise any sort of youthful protesters. They should just stop calling it fracking and call it fracking. Fracking and rapping and dogging and voting. All those things that youths enjoy, apparently.
Earthquakes are worrying, because we are not used to earthquakes. You know, and it's about whether...
That's what's wrong with us. We should have more and then we'd worry less about them.
I think we should prioritise maybe dealing with, like, leaves on a track first.
thing is, it's about the payoff, right? It's about whether the payoff is sufficient for fracking. So I get cheaper gas to heat my beans, but my house falls down.
Please don't.
You know, it's kind of like you've been offered a free holiday to the Bahamas, but you have to go with Donald Trump. Is the payoff sufficient?
What does heat my beans mean? Sort of it's a sort of colloquial phrase. What does it mean?
I think you're asking the wrong person.
Francis, when do you say heat my beans?
Can I just clarify for Miles's benefit? For lunch, I like to have a tin of beans with a little pork sausages because it makes me feel like a giant.
I was impressed by the amount of protests that there were. I noticed that North Yorkshire Police tweeted that they would not tolerate unlawful behaviour linked to hashtag NYShale protest. That is policing at the highest level.
Atypically, this is a landmark decision to allow tests for fracking in the North Yorkshire countryside. The decision was taken by North Yorkshire County Council, and it has to be said that dealing with far-reaching implications of environmental damage is something of a departure from their normal focus, which is, of course, ensuring that there are enough seagull-proof bins in Whitby. Environmental campaigners say the UK should abandon fracking in favour of renewable energy, which has all the advantages of conventional energy except for working. Paul Glover, the chair of petrophysics at the University of Leeds, said, "Our region has the chance to be at the centre of Europe's new fracking industry, and as a direct consequence, the chance to be at the centre of Europe's largest sinkhole." 2 points to Dane. Susan, which security firm has been phoning it in?
What happened was G4S were contracted to run the control room at Lincolnshire Police, and they had a call target. They had to answer 92% of calls within 10 seconds because it was 999, which generally means something quite bad is going on. Now, what they did in quiet times, G4S, is they phoned up test calls to bump up that average. So when no one else was phoning, someone else in the control room would nip round the corner and phone up and go, "I'm in trouble," and they'd go, "Oh, we've answered your call," and put the phone down, basically, so that they were contractually meeting their obligations. And Lincolnshire Police said there was no risk to the public involved. I used to have service level agreements when I was a lawyer, and we had to answer the phone within a certain number of rings and we had to respond to people, and I still do it. People often say, "Why do you answer the phone so quickly?" And it's because I still believe I have a general service level agreement with life, Miles.
I like the idea that they have sort of quiet times.
Yeah.
As if there's a bit when it's sort of like a nursery when someone just stands up at the front of the call and says, "OK, everybody, it's quiet time."
When you phone 999, it's an emergency and you need to have your phone call answered quickly rather than being on hold for ages. I don't know what tune they play on 999. I'm not quite sure.
London's burning.
Yeah,
like
something
that.
Like that.
Help. You answer quickly.
It sounds like very low-tech, like in sort of Ferris Bueller's when they try and sort of get the car to go backwards to get the sort of milometre down or something.
Yeah.
It sounds
like very
low-tech is their speciality, I think, G4S, isn't it, pretty much? That's why they keep messing up all their electronic tagging and things. It's a bit beyond them.
Yeah, they do.
There's a wonderful spokesman from G4S saying, "There's no room in our company for this sort of behaviour because we don't do this sort of thing," and which is they don't. They spend most of their time losing prisoners, and it's just a distraction. and also taking 50-something million quid for the Olympics, you remember, in 2012, and then saying at the last minute, "Oh, we forgot to hire any security guards. Do you think the army and the police could help us out instead?" And their annual general meeting last year, best of all, the G4S shareholders' AGM in London, they heard that there might be some protests, so they thought we'd better get some security in. And like idiots, they hired G4S to do it. And it all went horribly wrong because these security people decided to confiscate all electronic devices from the shareholders who were coming in. So they said, "Give us your phone, your iPad and everything," except that the annual report had been done on a sort of Wi-Fi version that they were all meant to be downloading at the meeting so they could ask their questions. And there were no hard copies available. So the shareholders were unable to ask any questions, so they then started complaining and rioting, at which point the G4S guards had to throw them out. Another unmitigated PR triumph.
Nautically, this is the tale of call centre staff employed by G4S on behalf of Lincolnshire Police, who repeatedly made 999 calls during quiet periods to artificially improve average response times. G4S say they've already suspended several workers from the call centre in question, which is encouraging, as anyone who works in a call centre knows it's the people manning the phones that are in charge of all the big decisions. All sorts of figures are used to measure police productivity, including numbers of arrests, successful prosecutions, or how quickly you wear out a truncheon. Or indeed how many years it takes before you admit culpability for a major public disaster for which anyone sane always knew you were entirely responsible for in the first place. We don't know whether all this was holding up genuine emergency calls from Lincolnshire residents, anxiously phoning police with the urgent news that they think they saw a foreigner. I'm joking, of course. The most commonly cited reason for ringing the emergency services in Lincolnshire is still, as it has been for many years, being unexpectedly served a non-county sausage. 2 points to Susan. And at the end of round one, the scores are Francis and Holly have 5, Dane and Susan have 4. We start round two with a cutting from the Daily Mail website.
Her Majesty arrived at the event in a horse-drawn carriage, accompanied by her husband, the Duke of Edinburgh, wearing a sea-green dress with lace overlay and matching jacket.
Our thanks to Richard Neal for sending in that majestic misunderstanding. Holly, why are more people saying, "Oh my God, I can't believe this"?
There are now more people of no religion in the country than there are of people who are Christians, or in England and Wales. So people who are non-religious outnumber the amount of Christians for the first time. St Mary's Catholic University did a survey, and that's what they've worked out, which is very sad, I think. As the daughter of a vicar, and recently having started going back to church after decades of not going to church, I'm starting to wonder why me going back to church has frightened so many people away. I sort of was thinking about what the church could do to attract more people. Obviously, free Wi-Fi, that would be a good one. I think cameo appearances. You know, if you went to Evensong and, like, Zayn Malik was there, that would be awesome. I'd say gluten-free Body of Christ. And the one thing I would probably plump for is to drop the whole peace be with you bit in communion, because I think that's what most people hate about church the most.
Oh, no, that's a sort of fabulous intermission.
Oh, you like that bit?
No, yeah. you have to snog everyone. Awful.
Where do you go to church, Francis?
You can't escape it now.
Just do a firm handshake, but I always find that a bit awkward.
Yeah. So, depending on how I feel, like midnight mass, I'll do like a lap. Makes me feel like I'm special. Does yeah, alright. I like Oprah. You get salvation. You get salvation. Everybody gets salvation.
Well, actually, a few years ago, I was for a few months assistant organist in our local village church. When the organist decided she wanted to go to Canada to see her grandchildren. One of the good things about being the organist was you could keep your distance from the rest of the congregation, and so they didn't start advancing on you and wanting to hug you and snog you. You could pretend you were playing a little tune at the time when they were making the sign of peace.
I love the idea that you were just playing a song that goes, "Keep away from me." One of the big arguments about this is that whether there should be as many bishops in the House of Lords, because obviously bishops get automatic entry to the HOL.
I thought you were going to see Alton Towers.
They get all you can eat at Pizza Hut.
Well, they
lunchtimes.
Get great. The picture of a whole lot of bishops with their mitres on going down the log flume. Fleetingly, this is the story that the power of Christ no longer compels us. A new study shows that the number of people in the UK identifying themselves as having no religion is now above those who identify as Christian for the first time. The trouble is, there's just so much else on the market these days. How can Christianity possibly compete with what's on offer from radical Islam, for instance, what with the clear goals and regular opportunities for travel? The church needs to modernise if it wants to bring in a younger, buzzfeedy 21st century crowd, which is why the C of E website is now leading with the stories, "Click here for 7 deadly sins to try before you're 30. Certainly, religious programming is going completely downhill. I watched a show called Russell Howard's Good News the other day. Nothing about the Bible in it at all. 2 points to Holly. Francis, why is this tower becoming like a ghost tower?
It's the Tower of Greed. Donald Trump wishes he thought of that name first, but we got it. It's London. On the south bank of the Thames, there's this place called the Tower of Greed. And the Guardian found out that of the 214 apartments there, I think about two-thirds are owned by overseas zillionaires and sort of offshore secretive shell companies and things. And the zillionaires are terrific. I mean, there's a Russian fertiliser billionaire and a wet fish billionaire, a Russian from Hong Kong, and a Kyrgyzstan vodka oligarch. And then just to make up the numbers, there's a chap who used to run a failed Nigerian bank, just in the interest of variety. And you imagine the residents' association meetings they must have. Whose turn is it on Neighbourhood Watch tonight? But actually, they're not residents, so they don't suppose they have there because it's dark at night. They're all just buying it as an investment. And Sadiq Khan said it's all the fault of Boris Johnson. This is his legacy. But in fact, planning permission was given in 2005 when Ken Livingstone was mayor. And the other person who was terrifically keen was John Prescott, then the Deputy Prime Minister, because the local council turned it down, the planning appeal people turned it down, but Prescott overruled them all and said, no, no, no. And they're now saying, well, we had no idea it was going to be appealing to billionaires and people like that. I mean, I thought it was just affordable housing.
It's slightly frightening, I suppose. London Mayor Sadiq Khan has pledged to crack down on foreign ownership of new homes, saying that he may introduce a rule that they must be sold to UK residents only for the first 6 months of marketing, which is lucky, because I'm sure there's a queue of teachers and nurses just waiting to snap up a £1 million penthouse with a helicopter launch pad and a robot concierge.
I understand the waste of buying something and then not using it. Last week, I ate 12 yogurts in one sitting because they were approaching their sell-by date and I couldn't stand to throw them out, so I just thought, I'll just have to eat them all. So I ate them all, so I didn't throw them out.
Well, who's to know these flats aren't just entirely crammed full of yogurts awaiting your attention, Susan?
The Tower of Greed.
Isn't oh, yes, it, like, it is, yeah, yeah.
Number 8, the Tower of Greed. If I was, like, trying to, like, be a Russian billionaire and invest, I'd be put off by that name.
I think, well, no, it doesn't stop people living in Trump Tower, does it?
I can't afford to live in London, and I would like to offer my services to live in one of those flats.
If you spent less money on yogurt and saved a bit of that money, you might have been able to afford a penthouse in London.
That's what we all do in London. We cut back on the yoghurt soup.
Egregiously, this is the story of the ghost tower in the London borough of Lambeth, more than 60% of which is owned by foreign investors who have left the place largely uninhabited. There are fears that this sort of property speculation will price young people out of the market, apart, of course, from the 10-year-old children of Russian oligarchs who say it's never been easier to lay your tiny manicured hands on a penthouse. The tower's residents have shown that developers are far more interested in foreign money than housing regular working people. Although, in their defence, a Russian vodka tycoon is less likely to ask annoying questions like, how close is the nearest supermarket? Or, why is the bathroom filled with the severed hands of the previous owner's business rivals? Personally, I think it's beautiful. It's like a cenotaph for the concept of affordable housing. Every year, our nation's leaders should gather around it and lay a poppy in remembrance of everyone forced to pay 800 quid to live above a burnt-out convenience store in a flat with a mouldy patch the landlord claims is a feature wall. Obviously, I've never done that, but some of my tenants have. Big shout-out if the radio's working. Two points to Francis. Susan, what plan may have a sting in its tail?
There is an insect called the emerald ash borer, which is an insect. I'm no David Attenborough, but I'll try and summarise. It's an insect, and it bores ash, not like by telling dull stories about their holiday. So it bores into ash trees and hurts the ash trees. And the plan is to release millions of tiny wasps. What could possibly go wrong with this plan? Millions of tiny wasps which will attack the eggs of the emerald ash borer, thus destroying them in an ecologically friendly way. So, in order to solve the ash tree problem, they're releasing millions of almost imperceptibly tiny wasps into 26 American states to try and save the ash trees. And now, the trees are important. I'm not saying the trees are not important. Millions of tiny... It's bad enough getting rid of a giant wasp. Imagine 30 million tiny wasps. So, to save the trees, the Americans are unleashing an ecological disaster upon all of us. I think it's going to go wrong.
I assume it's a sort of Manchurian candidate thing. They're pre-programmed and they're being put in place for when Trump becomes president. Yeah. And then he'll snap his fingers and say, come, my pretties. And he'll just let them loose on any, you know, Mexicans, Muslims, whoever incurs his anger that week. And off they go.
I'd just like to be the person who had to shout, release the wasps! That'd be an awesome job.
Yeah. There was an issue with religion before. I feel like after this plague... Going to get a nice spike in people going back to church because
Trump becoming president and 30 million wasps being reached across over half the states in America, I think, is the beginning of revelations.
Semiotically, in another stunningly wise military escalation, the United States have released millions of wasps. Initially, it was hard to get agreement from the wasps because, unlike bees, they've abandoned the monarchy in favour of an anarcho-syndicalist republic. And I have to say, who can blame them? How many of us have found ourselves watching Springwatch and thought this would really be livened up by the unexpected arrival of a million wasps? Sorry, Kate. 2 points to Susan. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting that they'd like to share? Francis.
Yes, thanks to Keith Thompson from Powys for this from the Yahoo News website. Hollyoaks shocker. Talented actress joins cast.
Holly.
This one's from Mike Openshaw, and it's from an email that was sent to him. It says, please find attached a flyer for the Chippenham Rifle and Pistol Club shooting event on Sunday the 8th of May. If you do not wish to shoot yourself, please circulate and display the flyer.
Dane.
I have a classified ad from the Exeter Express, and it's frustrated single guy, 60, seeks uninhabited lady for discreet adult pleasure.
Susan.
Sent in by Irene Hagen from the Derry Journal. A man has admitted stealing a pedicure set, hand sanitizer, and lip balm from a local chemist. Defence solicitor Seamus Quigley said, skin and nail care are extremely important to any man in the modern world. This defendant is no exception to the rule.
Thank you. And now let's take a look at the final score. Dane and Susan have 8, but this week's winners are Holly and Francis with 9. Before we leave you, here is an extract from The Guardian, sent in by Chris Sansom, Laura Blakemore, Mike Foster and many, many others.
How many seats in a coffee shop does it take to necessitate provision of a customer loo? 15? 5? A solitary stool and a sticky counter?
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Francis Ween, Holly Walsh, Dane Baptiste and Susan Kalman. In the chair was Miles Jupp and the news was read by me, Kathy Clugston. The chair script was written by Madeline Brettingham, Max Davis and James Kettle, with additional material by Sarah Campbell and Ahir Shah. The producer was Paul Sheehan and it was a BBC Studios production.